We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Howdy, Tiger fans. I know it's been a while since we podcasted, and we actually recorded this just prior to the news of Laird Veach being the new athletic director at Mizzou. So Colin and I go on the first couple minutes talking about the search for the athletic director and why it's taken so long, so it's a little outdated, but fear not, we will be coming back shortly to talk about the new athletic director hire. Obviously, it's a big deal for the university and the direction of this program, so enjoy the show and know there's another one coming. Support the Trough Toilets, guys. M-I-Z.
Gonna throw it. Slam. This bug's for you, Mizzou.
They are carving up this LSU defense.
They don't get no better than that, man.
Now Cook's going to throw the deep ball, and Burton's past the defense. Touchdown, Luther Burton, 47 yards.
Snap to place, kick is up. It is...
Yes! Down a walk-off winner from 61. Harrison Meadus.
This is the Mazodcast.
Howdy, Tiger fans. Welcome to the Mazodcast. I'm your host, Brennan Anthony. Joining me, as always, is my longtime brother, Colin Anthony.
What's up, dum-dums?
Well, Colin, it's been a long time since we potted, but I think enough stuff has gathered in this offseason. We're well overdue for a podcast.
Agreed. I need this outlet.
Yeah, I think, you know, usually what we'll do is start our season after Mizzou's spring game. And Drinkwitz has changed the way the spring game works and kind of taken the wind out of the spring game sails, in my opinion, by doing it as early as possible. He has a good reason for that.
Was there really any wind in our spring games?
No, but there have been attempts at there being wind in the sails. And I guess when we had our spring game at the same time that everybody else has had their spring game, and like Texas had their spring game tonight, I've seen it all over Twitter because people are jerking off about a certain Manning kid. But we have it so early that it's forgotten by the time the other teams are having their spring game. And he wants to do that early to get out of the way any potential injuries that might be incurred, and I'm sure there's better reasons than that, but you know, there's just not much to report from the spring game. And then I think in the time that we've been off, the big news was that we landed a quarterback. Obviously Sam Horn got hurt, and that was a concern because he would be backup this year, but he would be a potential starter next year. But Drinkwitz went out and got himself his first 2025 recruit in the person of Matt Zollers, a four-star quarterback from Pennsylvania, beat out Georgia, Penn State, and I think Pitt for this Zollers kid. And so he's got himself a young recruit and a star recruit at the quarterback position, which I'm sure makes everybody feel better. But that was the news that has passed. And since then, a lot has gone on, including the never-ending search for an athletic director. Desiree Reed-Francois, departed, golly, I think back in fucking February. And there has still been no news to report on that front. And Colin, I don't know about you, but it is, I feel like our athletic department is just operating in a very weird fashion. I mean,
yeah. Like
the curators are just running the department and making no bones about
it. I like that Drinkwitz is part of the, like, the search committee, you know, like they're openly be like, yeah, Drinkwitz is helping us with the search. And just like, I just feel like it's a bit of a shit show over there right now, despite all our success. I'm like, eh. I just feel like the curators are really high on their own farts. Like they are really proud of themselves. And they're like, hey, we got this whole thing under control. No problem.
Yeah. The only updates we've had is that it's moving along. That's what they've said. You know, they have hired this turnkey ZRG consulting firm to seek out a new athletic director. And, you know, it's just one of these things. So like, well, we hire a consulting firm because that way, if they hire a bad athletic director, we can deflect blame and say it wasn't our fault. It was the consulting firm. So we'll hire a different consulting firm next time. But there's been no movement on it. And I think the strangest thing to come is really the biggest news of the week, which was the curators came out and announced that they had approved a $250 million renovation to Faurot Field's North Concourse, the North.
And again, Brennan, a curator making the announcement, like in front of the cameras, wasn't Drinkwitz. There's obviously no AD.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Moon Choi. It's like, what is happening right now?
Moon Choi was up there with Robert.
I know, but you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like the curators are really tugging themselves off a bit here.
The weird thing is that
they got main character vibes going on, bro.
yeah, not NPCs. Anyway, the weird thing is that normally something of this magnitude, a $250 million stadium renovation, that would be tagged to an athletic director. You know what I mean? Like that would be, you're like listing the accomplishments an athletic director had. You know, one of, I guess, Sterk's things was finally finalizing the South End Zone project. And we're like, well, tack that onto his resume if something good he did. This either tells us that, well, I think one of the things that I mentioned a long time ago is that athletic directors sometimes get a lot of credit for things they had very little involvement in, and sometimes they get a lot of blame for things that they didn't have a lot of involvement in. You know, there's not even an athletic director here, so nobody's going to get this other than the curators, and they're basically saying, like, we don't need an athletic director. We're making these huge athletic department plans, this reshaping of the footprint of the major sport in the entire department, and we don't need an athletic director to have any say in it, you know, like how it looks or what the money's being directed towards. There's not an athletic director. There's no leadership to be found, and the curators are saying, we're fine with that. We'll do it all.
Like, I feel like this is we've got this. It's just pure arrogance. And at some point, the athletic department is going to have something blow up in their face because the athletic director position exists because it's necessary. You know, and I just don't feel like they don't know what they don't know right now. You know, something's going to kick them right in the balls because they have just sort of drugged their feet and thought we've got this under control, no problem. And I'm not super confident that they do.
They're not even supposed to just be over our university in Columbia. They're supposed to be over the four campus system in Rolla, St. Louis, Kansas City, and Columbia. And they're directly pulling the levers on a department within Columbia. I mean, they're very, very much in the weeds. And until we have an athletic director, even if it's one, I mean, it gives me every indication that when we finally do get an athletic director, there'll be a puppet athletic director.
I don't think anyone could have any other opinion at this point.
Yeah.
Like they railroaded the last athletic director in the hiring of the football coach, which worked out. But they did railroad the fucking athletic director. And then they chased this athletic director out of town in deference to the football coach.
You would think a more strategic approach would have been to hire a new athletic director and then to approve this massive stadium renovation so as to give the new athletic director an early win. You know what I mean?
And yeah. And hey, look at the athletic director we hired. Look at this great project he put together.
That's right. Instead, they're taking those wind that wind out of the.
Yeah, because they're like, we want the credit because we like the credit for hiring Drinkwitz. And like, again, our farts smell terrific.
You know, and Colin, at the end of the day, I don't really care how the sausage is made and the hiring decisions and the leadership roles at the university, as long as the right decisions get made. So as long as the curators do, I mean, I don't think anybody's complaining about the planned new North End Zone project and the $250 million they're dropping into it. The renderings look beautiful as far as I can tell. You know, it looks really cool. They're retaining the Rock M and the grassy knoll on the north side, which I know a lot of people are happy about. I think our biggest concern, Colin, and I think we're the only podcast who's really carrying the banner on this, is that they plan to do renovations to the bathrooms throughout the stadium. And we have pretty strong feelings about the trough urinals.
Yeah, they're a Columbia and a Faro institution. And
sure,
I think the curators aren't going to acknowledge that. I can add that to the list of my concerns.
You know, I think, Colin, in general, it's easy for a fan base to sort of get to where they turn on each other, you know, especially like when the season's not going well. We've been involved in that in the past, you know, like this guy should be fired. No, he should be retained. And then, you know, we lost because of this. No, we lost because of that. And the fans turn on each other. And generally, I'd like to keep that at a minimum, you know, like we should all row in the same direction. But I am willing to go to bat for keeping the trough urinals. You know, I think it's a very important part of our fan experience in our lifetime when we go to Mizzou games to make sure that your urine intermixes with other Mizzou fans. You know what I mean? Like it's not quite the same experience when your urine is in a separate container than another Mizzou fans. You know, this is a communal experience. And
it is. That's right.
You know, the dark brown urine should mix with the clear urine from the guy who's been hydrating well. It should all go down the same pipe at the same time. This is what Faro Field is all about. And, I saw on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, that nothing was more polarizing. We got no more responses on anything, be it recruits, be it the AD search, be it the North End Zone project, than when we talked about the trough urinals, Colin. And people had strong opinions, and not everyone shared our opinion. And I'm happy to say,
well, Brendan, there's people out there. You know who they are.
Yeah, they're people who suffer from SPS.
That's right.
And if you haven't been listening for a long time, SPS is a common condition. And frankly, Colin and I are sufferers. It's called small pimples.
We just don't give a damn.
That's right. We're not letting it get away in the way of our proud trough toilets. And people with small pickle syndrome, or SPS as it's commonly known, they maybe shy away from the troughs, understandably. But this is a time where we all stand literally side by side together during football games. And it's important. And the people who want to get rid of the troughs, who don't like it, who think it's gross, who are a little shy, they're just wrong in this case. And I'm happy to go to war with them, even if they're, you know, Mizzou fans, because this is important and it needs to be retained. And Colin, I said this online too, like I'm not against change. You know, if we need to upgrade to a new fancier high tech Wi-Fi trough toilet, by all means, let's do it.
Yes.
But it has to be a trough.
I agree. I'm not going to say it's more important than the Rock M, but it's at least as important as the Rock M.
As important. Yeah.
Look, yes.
We can upgrade. It can be an HD trough urinal. You know what I mean? Like I'm happy to pee in HD with a screen that gives me the updated score while I'm urinating next to my fellow man. But I want to be urinating next to my fellow man.
Yeah. It's like you said, it's a communal experience. The place where Mizzou fans are forged in the crucible of Faro Field. You know what I mean? Like every kid from, you know, his first football game experience to the grandpa that take them, they've all peed in the communal trough toilet. It's a part of our fabric. It's who we are.
At the same time. And you know what? It can be intimidating when you're a 7-year-old boy at your first Mizzou game and there's some stranger standing next to you who's 6'4" and whips out an enormous dripping hog. But that's part of doing business. You know what I mean? Like, it's a tough business out there. You know,
yeah.
You got to do what you got to do.
Well, I think people just have to be less self-conscious. Like, listen, it's just anatomy. We've all got hogs. We've all got big old dripping hogs.
Sure.
Some of us just aren't as big as others, but let's all just, it's not about the dripping hog, Brennan. It's about that experience of standing side by side with your fellow man, you know, an 8-year-old kid on your right, a 23-year-old college student drunk off his ass on your left. You know, like just, and everybody's just there together in the moment.
Our hogs are all rowing in the same direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So anyway, that's our impassioned appeal.
Yeah.
But other than that, to the curators, not to fuck with the trough toilets.
Everything I see in the rendering is great, but keep the damned troughs. It's all I ask. And it's, you know, they're more efficient. Let's be honest. You get in, you get out.
They have water, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So it's the green thing to do. Anyway, Colin, it is bizarre that we're having this huge update to our stadium. And it's supposed to be done by 2026, I think. It'll change the face of the stadium forever in a way that is facing, you know, stadium. So it is highway facing, unlike the south end zone, which unless you're on the other side, you're in the woods back there, you don't really notice what a tremendously enormous change that was to the stadium. This north end zone, it will be much more public facing. And all the Arkansas people and South Carolina people who kind of bellyache about our stadium and say it's like a high school stadium, I've never quite understood that. I get that because we have a bowl-style stadium, it doesn't look as big on television as a stacked stadium. Like South Carolina's is you got different tiers, like three tiers, and it's taller, but it doesn't necessarily hold more people. I mean, it's bigger than ours, but it looks much bigger. The bowl stadium just never looks that big. Even those 100,000 seat sort of Michigan bowls it's deceptively big. But enclosing the stadium in this way will really give a bigger appearance, I feel like. It'll make the stadium look more professionalized, I think. And in doing that and retaining the historical stuff like the Rock M, which from the renderings to me looks like they're actually going to like have like lighting around the edges of the Rock M. It looks fucking cool. It looks like really nice renderings, like I felt like the south end zone renderings were a little underwhelming when they came out. I really liked
them. I did too. Out,
but a little bit underwhelming. I didn't feel that way about this. This looks awesome.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm all about it. I think it's great. And it's just a little strange for the decision and the plans. Like, who did this? I wonder if Renee Francois, I wonder how much of this is her, and all they had to do was sort of button it up to announce it.
Yeah, it is weird because, you know, at first this was supposed to be like a campus-wide, athletic department-wide restructuring, and that plan got completely squashed. We never heard anything about it, but the football portion of it clearly is on pace to continue. So
I think everybody in the fan base and the media and the curators, everybody has gotten intoxicated with this current brush with football relevancy.
Yeah.
They're like, playoffs? This is awesome. You know, and I don't know. It's just like become a big flex, which is good. I mean, that's what builds programs. It's what makes you into something special is a bunch of fucking people with deep pockets and curators who care about football more than education. Frankly, you know what I mean? Like if you want the best university, probably not a great recipe. If you want the best fucking football team, okay. You know, if these guys are willing to spend money and sort of basically they just told the rest of the athletics to just pound sand, we've got a football team now. So I know that it's an unpopular opinion to probably love that approach, but I love that approach, you know? Listen, Alabama is never going to be confused with a scholarly, great educational university. But goddamn, they got a good football team. And at the end of the day, that's why I do this podcast and why I care about the Tigers, is because goddamn, I care about the football team. And so I'm sort of okay with all of it.
Yeah. No, I am too. I'm excited about it. And it's funny because Mizzou has had successful seasons before. And certainly when they are good, there are side effects, you know, like enrollment goes up there, you know, the sales for Mizzou apparel goes up, additions to the stadium and donations are easier to come by. But I feel like this most recent year, like you said, our, you know, win in the Cotton Bowl over Ohio State, 11 wins. And I guess, you know, an outlook that looks very positive coming in next year with a 12-team playoff. People are very excited, and it is spawning success and spawning excitement and dollars and changes in a way that I hadn't seen previously from 1 year's big season, you know, one big season. I mean, it's so easy to forget that a year ago, Drinkwitz had never won a bowl game, was 500 in his entire time he'd been here, and was starting to get on the hot seat. You know, that's what one solid year can do. Now he can do no wrong. They're dumping $250,000 into renovations to the stadium, and everybody is looking to have our wind at our back. And it's just 1 year. And, you know, I'm obviously Dennis Gates is hoping the same thing can happen to him because he had such a disastrous year heading, you know, coming into this next season. But it's spawned some real movement, and this state, you know, $250,000 dumping into the stadium is a huge deal. You know, Colin, I did want to pivot to basketball a little bit, if you're all right with that.
Sure.
You know, the thing is, there's been a lot of off-season roster movement for the basketball team and Dennis Gates. But before we get into that, there is a story about a former Mizzou basketball player, which I think trumps any sort of just off-season NIL roster recruiting, blah, 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 that happens all the time. And that is the deal with Jontay Porter. I mean, holy moly. How close?
And Brennan, you are going to have to walk me through this because I'll be perfectly honest. I know Jontay Porter was involved in some gambling and got banned for life. That's what I know.
Banned for life from the NBA. And I mean, you and I, we know that Jontay Porter is not Michael Porter Jr. And he had like a two-way contract with the Raptors. He is in the NBA, but he is not a star in the NBA. And frankly, Colin, I always thought that Jontay Porter should have stuck around one more year at Mizzou. It would have done him well because he was a good player and he was a little skinny, a little lanky, and I feel like a little filling out
off for his size.
He could have gotten maybe drafted and been in a better position to enter the NBA than what he ended up doing. But this thing kind of comes out of nowhere to me, which is colossal bad decision-making by Jontay Porter. So the thing about this is it's very Pete Rose-esque. You know, Jontay Porter has been banned for gambling in his own sport. He and the way that he was gambling was crazy to me. He had been betting through a third party these prop bets, and these prop bets on individuals, his own play. An $80,000 bet was placed that Porter would underperform, and then he pulled himself out of the game claiming to be ill. It would have been a $1.1 million payoff. So the bet was actually frozen because the online sports operator detected an unusual pattern. And I don't know exactly what that is, but there was an investigation in it. And I think part of it was that this is not the first time that he'd done something like this, but there's an organization, I guess, that monitors in suspicious activities within the NBA.
Well, a lot of people bet on Jontay Porter doing a bad job. And even though there's only 18 people in the world that know who he is, you know, it's a lot of action on a guy nobody's heard of.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, that these the NBA and all these professional sports are kind of opening themselves up to a little bit of this because not everybody is a big star and they are getting in bed with these gambling agencies, and gambling is becoming such a big deal in sports. But the fact that
he impacted
his own play to affect the outcome of a bet. And then he was personally involved, this is in like $54,000 worth of bets, including these prop bets, which included the Raptors, his own team, which is, this is beyond the kind of betting that even Pete Rose did, because Pete Rose back in the day never bet on Reds games. You know what I mean? Like this is big, big deal. And so colossally stupid. You know, it just so stupid. You know, he was making, I think, maybe like $750,000 a year being a low level NBA player, and could have, you know, who knows, done that for how long. It is embarrassing for him. It's embarrassing for his family. And I'm sure you've probably heard the other thing about Coben Porter out in Colorado.
I didn't.
He got into
it. Did it happen on Fallout, Brennan? Because that's what I've been watching.
It didn't. No, the Coben Porter, the younger brother, had a DUI car crash and killed someone, and has
been
to 6 years in prison this week, yesterday, as a matter of fact. So the Porters are having themselves a week. And I mean, honestly, Michael Porter Jr. at times has said some stuff publicly that's kind of made me scratch my head and be like, I want to support you, Michael Porter Jr., but you, I don't know. The Porter family has had some ups. I mean, I think it's safe to say Jonte Porter's fucked himself eight ways to Sunday and made terrible decisions.
I didn't realize to the level it was. I didn't know if he was just gambling and they were making an example of him. I didn't realize he was betting on himself and then throwing performances like Black Sox scandal-esque. I mean, that's pretty heavy stuff.
That nobody said the word mafia, but it's like, seems like that level of like throwing your own
performance. I don't feel like the mafia would be this stupid.
That's probably right.
You know what I mean? Like, they'd be like, hey, we're going to place a couple of bets on this Jonte. But, you know, don't tell every motherfucker that you know to place bets on Jonte, because they're going to, you know, they're going to flag it.
Yeah.
But that's what I feel like probably happened here. And this is pure speculation. But like Jonte Porter's third party buddy told his buddy and then that guy's buddy. And pretty soon, you know, 780 people made a prop bet on fucking Jonte Porter, a player who hadn't had three bets made on him the entire fucking year.
Yeah.
And they went like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And then, whoops, Jonte Porter goes out of the game. Well, this is convenient for the 700 people that appeared out of nowhere to bet on this fucking player nobody's heard of ever for the first time. Man, this has really worked out in their favor.
I just like, how much was he looking to make on this? Because the risk, the downside is that his name is marred forever. You know, Jonte and banned for life from the NBA and gambling fuck up. That's who he is now forever.
Yeah. Like, that's, I was always like, never cared about the Pete Rose thing because he didn't bet on himself or the Reds. So it's like, who cares if he bets on the Pirates playing St. Louis? You know what I mean? Like, what difference does it make to, you know, I get it, integrity of the game and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, I was kind of like, fucking difference does it make? Yeah. You know, the problem is it's against the rules, and Pete Rose knew it was against the rules and did it anyway. So that's why you've got to punish him. But I always felt like the punishment didn't fit the crime.
Sure.
This feels much worse than what Pete Rose did.
Yeah. And those guys knew what the stakes were if they got caught doing something like this. And he did it anyway.
Yeah. And it's weird too. Like, Jonte Porter comes from a well-to-do family. He's making tremendous amounts of money. Even, you know, he's making $750,000 a year as a a backup. Essentially, he's got a brother who's a multi-millionaire. You mean, like, how much money do you need? Like, that, you would throw it all, you would gamble it all away for $80,000, you know, or whatever. It's, or $1.1 million, I guess, in this case. But, you know, it's like, I guess, I mean, I don't know. It's just so colossally dumb.
It's so fucking stupid. I will say, not as dumb as killing a lady while drunk driving, but still pretty
stupid. Yeah, pretty stupid. It's crazy.
Well, let's move on from Jonte, because it was just a black mark that doesn't directly impact Mizzou, but he is obviously an alum.
We're Mizzou fans are some of the 18 people who know who he is,
right?
And so it's something to us.
Yeah,
because I literally, what I did see about, I like on brief TikTok, there's some podcast and they're like, who the fuck's Jonte Porter? I literally said that. I'm like, oh, yeah. I guess if you're not a Mizzou fan, like, you don't have a fucking clue who Jonte Porter is. He's never done anything in the league that would garner any real attention.
He certainly has now.
Yeah, he's super famous in the NBA now.
The actual basketball team, Colin, there has been a lot of offseason movement. Dennis Gates has been very successful, seemingly. The big news was that earlier in the week, it was announced that Duke transfer Mark Mitchell, a former five-star prospect, was transferring to Mizzou. I don't know the last time that we've taken someone away from Duke, but Konzo Martin had tried to rein Mitchell in because he's from Kansas City, Kansas. When he was being recruited originally as a freshman, he went to Duke instead. He's sort of in a hybrid position. He's 6'9", and you know, can play forward, can play guard. It's probably the biggest get in the offseason for Gates and bolstering an already strong recruiting class freshman. Obviously, it's needed because this was a terrible team last year. They already picked up Tony Perkins, who was at Iowa, and he's a 6'4 guard and kind of take over that combo role. This team is going to have a lot of departures, obviously, and none of them will be missed greatly because this is such a fucking bad, bad team.
Yeah, it's the whole team's turning over and it needs to. And it gives me more confidence in Gates to like recognize, be like, oh, this roster's not good enough. Sorry, everybody's out of a job now. And that's, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's a competitive sport. It's a premier sport at Division I school, and you know, you need to treat it as such, and that means getting players who can, you know, carry the water at Division I, because you know, they're nothing against those guys on the team from last year, but most of them they're just out of their depth.
Yeah, Noah Carter and Nick Ahn are not going to get you to the Final Four, and
and it's a controversial position because Nick Ahn has been nothing but a hustle monster. He gives it his all out there, but I'm just like, again, Nick Ahn is he's got way too big a role on that basketball team. Like, you don't want Nick Ahn to be part of your, you know, you don't want to need to depend on Nick Ahn. Yeah. Just say that. And if you are, you're in trouble.
You know, I saw somebody gave us a little bit of heat because the transfer portal had been good to Gates so far in this offseason, that we'd said, you know, that Gates had squandered the goodwill from his first year. And I'm like, none of that changed. It wasn't like people have such a short memory. Like, it was still a bad, 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 bad 8-win year. And even though we're getting in, it looks like a big talent upgrade between freshmen and transfers, there's no guarantee that it's going to work out. And if it doesn't work out,
look at
Gates, will be gone. You know what I mean? Like, Gates isn't like suddenly revived from this. He still got to win. And I think because the recruiting season and the transfer season and the portal and everything has taken up so much of the calendar, that some fans get more worked up about recruiting than they actually do the wins and the losses during the regular season. You know, and I've never been that kind of fan.
It becomes its own source of competition.
But yeah, they get more excited about getting a recruit who may or may not ever piss a drop. You know what I mean?
Well, like, Brendan,
I hope Aiden Shaw turns into a good player, but he's been a disappointment so far. And people are so excited about him coming on board. But I'm like, let's win with him, and then I'll be super excited. But just the potential from a recruit doesn't excite me. Let's see it turn into the actual games. And there is definitely a part of the fan base is more excited about recruiting than they are about the actual playing of the basketball games. And so, like, I hope this all works out, but it very much has to work out for Dennis Gates this year because of how bad last season went. A good offseason recruiting class doesn't erase the record from last year. Let's turn it around on the court. You know, turn it around on the court. And you know what I mean? Like, we've been big supporters of Gates, but we're also not these Pollyannas that aren't going to pretend like an 8-win season isn't bad. It's bad.
Well, you said it, you know. Aiden Shaw is the perfect cautionary tale. You know, he was going to be this, I mean, like, averages like 2.9 points a game and a handful of rebounds, you know, and this was your, and you can see why he had all those stars next to his name. Cause once a game, somebody throws him a pass where he makes some really athletic, super cool dunk. And you're like, well, there it is. I mean, there's the head turning moment, but at the end of the day, he hasn't really equaled any. He's not been a determining factor in almost any games. And so not that all of those players that we are recruiting will not pan out, but like I said, it has to get done on the court. And I think it will. I mean, nothing trumps talent. And so, and I think Gates can coach. I think last year, he just didn't have the horses in the stable, and maybe he knew it before the season, but you know, he was very positive about what he expected from this basketball team. And I don't know what I expected him to say, but you know, he was very positive. And I think because of his first year success, everybody's like, okay, we're going to take your word for it. And then sort of felt blindsided by this abomination of a season that kind of came to pass. But maybe we should have expected it. You know, because after you watch the basketball games, you see the players and sort of you're like, oh, maybe I should have known better.
I don't think you can ever expect it to be as bad as 8 wins. You know what I mean? Like,
No.
You can expect a drop off for sure. But like this was, their answers, you know, answers need to be demanded when they're this bad. You know, like there's certainly a lack of player depth or skill, but there's coaching problems when you can't muster 10 wins or a single win in conference. Like Dennis Gates needs to atone.
I wouldn't call it a coaching problem. I wouldn't say that. I'd say it's a recruiting problem.
I don't know, Colin. I feel like you can coach your way into double-digit wins or at least a single win. And when you can't muster more than 8 fucking wins, I think there is a coaching problem. I can't say exactly where, but there's a problem fucking somewhere, you know, and it's not just recruiting, although recruiting is a huge deal. And I know that you say it's the top 3 things, recruiting, recruiting, and recruiting, but it's a disastrous season when you have 8 wins. And so all I'm getting at is that Dennis Gates has to atone for that season because it was so bad. With 3 conference wins, you know, he's got to improve, but he doesn't have to atone for it. He needs to answer for what that season was, to prove that that was an anomaly and that he can coach and that he can recruit, because it cannot be repeated. We cannot have a second Kim Anderson. And if he has multiple seasons like this one, that's what he'll be.
Yeah, but I said that's a pretty negative turn. I think this recruits are exactly what he needed.
Yeah.
You know, he needed talent. And I'm more in the camp of this is a roster issue, which is still Dennis Gates' fault. Don't get me wrong, but I don't look at him as a coach and be like, oh, he's something's broken. I think he just didn't get enough horses in the stable. And I think, you know, once these kids are not stupid, they probably knew very quickly after a few games, like, uh-oh, everybody's bigger and faster and stronger than us, and that we're and you lose confidence, and it just snowballs, and before you know it, you have a season where you got 0-19 in the conference.
Yeah. Well, that's Colin. You're right. And what I'm saying is that one season turns into the next, so things can be fixed, things can be improved. Everybody will be happy. You know, like look what happened with Drinkwitz and the Cotton Bowl and the season we had last year with football. Everything's fixed, but I do want to harp on the fact that 8 wins total and 0 wins in conference is horrifically bad and shouldn't, you know, this is not just a down year. It's horrifically bad.
Yeah, it's historically bad.
It drags into the next season and it can be erased by improvement. You know what I mean? Like, and it doesn't even have to be, I'm not demanding that we go to the Sweet 16 this year. I'm just saying we have to show signs of improvement. It can't be like it was this year. We can't have this year again, ever. And there's no reason to believe that it will be, because like you said, the roster looks like it will be improved, but it simply cannot be repeated, because that's what, when we say a Kim Anderson season, everybody knows what that is, because he had 3 years that looked like this, like 9 wins, 10 wins, and 10 wins, something like that. Terrible seasons. Dennis Gates has now got an 8-win season under his belt. If he has more of those types of seasons, he just won't last very long here. And so that's why, like, I don't want to sound negative, but like, it just, all I'm saying is don't do it again, you know? And I don't think he will. I think he's taking the steps to make sure that it doesn't happen again, but it can't happen again.
Yeah. I mean, you can't have back-to-back historically bad seasons. I don't care what your recruiting classes look like. What else is on our list of things we are supposed to talk about?
Well, so that is what we put out there. And I do want to close with the basketball, not sounding terribly negative, because I think we've got some really exciting players coming in. Some of the guys that are coming in, the freshmen and these transfers, look to be really fun players, and they're going to fill holes that are desperately needed. So there's reason for good optimism for next year. But yes, those are the things we had talked about that we wanted to mention. Specifically, I think top of the list was the trough urinals, but we've gotten to the other stuff. We did throw it out there to our listeners whether there were other things they wanted us to talk about, Colin. One of them was Mizzou softball team, which is a feather in the cap of this athletic department year in and year out. And this is no—
Have they been good?
They have been good. They're number 13 in the country. And Colin, they sell tickets. People come to these games. People want to watch the softball team, especially when the weather's nice. They did take it on the chin and were swept by number 9 Georgia over the weekend. But Missouri's number 13 in the country in softball, and they continue to look good. I think they're 35-13 overall. And the season is winding down, so they're in a position to, you know, be in the postseason and hopefully go far. That's where I think the softball team has fallen off in the past, is that they've looked really good. They get to the regionals and then they kind of don't do anything. Hopefully they'll move a little forward. But it's pretty clear that Colin and I don't know much about softball, and I think it's pretty safe that for us to glaze right on past that, mentioning that they're good. We're glad they're good. Moving on.
I say we have a barely passing knowledge of the football team, and we do a whole podcast about it.
Fair enough. Speaking of football, Colin, one of the things that had been asked that we've mentioned is the departure of Mike Cox is no longer around.
Nobody wants to lose Mike Cox.
No, it's the last thing you want to do is think you have him safe and secure, and you look down, and Mike Cox isn't there. You know what I mean? And Mike Cox. Yeah.
Mike Cox is filling other teams' holes.
Mike Cox never seen the action that I was hoping Mike Cox was going to get. You know what I mean? You always want Mike Cox to get action.
Mike Cox doing well was always sort of something I wanted to put an emphasis on every year for this football team.
And you knew that Mike Cox is always ready. You know what I mean? Mike Cox is wanting to get out there. Mike Cox is wanting some action.
Yeah, he's just throbbing on the sideline.
Absolutely.
He's waiting for an opportunity.
Yeah, Mike Cox wanted to pound the hole and see success, get to the finish line. But it won't be happening in Columbia. There's a lot of running back talent, and unfortunately, Mike Cox doesn't look like he was in the cards to, you know, I feel
big,
for Mike
strong
Cox.
Mike Cox.
But Mike not Cox gonna be playing somewhere. There's always room somewhere for Mike Cox.
That's been my experience.
So we wish Mike Cox well. We're glad to have him as a Tiger, and we know he'll have success somewhere. There's always going to be a lot of fans for Mike Cox. Carter Gold, Colin, had asked that we cover the Israel-Palestine conflict.
I wouldn't touch that with a 100-foot pole.
Yeah, moving on. He also asked that we discuss our feelings on roundabouts.
I like them. I hate old people in combination with them.
Mm-hmm. You just hate old people, or you hate old people in combination with roundabouts?
Both.
Yeah. I worry about our mother and roundabouts. You know what I mean? Like, I know she's not the best driver.
Old people.
Yeah. But she's never been the best driver on straight roads. You know what I mean? With clearly defined stop signs and lights. And we have to make these decisions in roundabouts. I just worry about disaster looming ahead. I don't have strong opinions on roundabouts. I think that old people fear them. People from the sticks fear them. And, if it keeps people out of my town because they fear roundabouts, then I'm
all for. that's really their best features. They're sort of like trash deterrent.
Yes, they are. They're very, very scary things if you've never been in one.
Yeah.
But it means that no one has to stop usually, and traffic moves better, and roundabouts are fine. Moving on, the last thing Carter had asked us to talk about was the fact that Tim Robinson, who most people know that we're big fans of from his Netflix show, I Think You Should Leave, as well as his old Comedy Central show, The Detroiters, which I think is underrated, has been signed by Netflix to create a pilot.
I thought it was HBO.
It was HBO, yeah. Sorry, Miss. Has been signed by HBO to create a pilot comedy special. And I think that HBO, you know, they're losing Curb Your Enthusiasm. They lost Barry, which was a much smaller show, but a comedy nonetheless. And they're looking to fill the gap there. And so Tim Robinson has got a new outlet on HBO. I'm eager to see what comes of that. And I know it'll be a while before anything does, because I don't think they've even started making it yet. But he's certainly going to be putting together a pilot, and we're big Tim Robinson fans.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah,
I don't know what else there's to say.
Well, hey, Colin, I did want to do a little housekeeping before we go. Obviously, I think I might have mentioned once or twice, I wrote a book called Respectable X about the 1960 Mizzou team. And on April 27th, a couple of the players, Jerry Wallach and Don Wainwright, are hosting a book launch party for me in St. Louis. And I'll put the details out there on Twitter. But some of Mizzou's football alums are going to be in attendance, including Johnny Rowland, who I believe is Mizzou's first ever real football superstar. He was like sort of the 1962, 64 teams Johnny Rowland was. He was the NFL Rookie of the Year and was a huge football star for Mizzou and in the NFL, and has his name retired on the side of the stadium. He's going to be there. Dan Dierdorf, I think, might be there. It'll be a lot of fun. Like I said, I'll put all the information on Twitter, so that if you want to come, if you're in St. Louis on April 27th, head on out, get yourself a book, and meet a Mizzou star from the past. I know a lot of people are jazzed up about our recruits for the future. I like my sports history, obviously. So anyway, come on out, get a book, say hi, have something to drink, and meet at least, you know, Johnny Rowland or some big Mizzou superstar. So anyway, I wanted to get that out there before we signed off. Anyway, Colin, is there anything else that you're interested in? Have we left anything off? I mean, I think the big football renovations, I'm excited to see those unfold, you know, the $250 million renovations. And obviously we've got our work cut out for us, politicking and lobbying to keep the trough toilets.
That's going to be a battle.
Yeah, it's gonna be a battle. We can't keep the trough toilets, I would like to somehow get our hands on them. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, I was kind of, you know how they sell the seats from stadiums that are being like demolished.
Yeah.
The fans are like, would they be willing to part with said trough toilets?
Yeah, I think
I'd like a local bar in Columbia to buy them. You know what I mean? Like, wouldn't it be great if Harpo's brought in the stadium trough toilets? Like, what about the ultimate piece of memorabilia?
Absolutely. I mean, think of how many great games somebody's pissed in those toilets in the middle of. You know what I mean? Like the Oklahoma win, get the game day. Think of all the people, the memories that have washed through the urine and the plumbing of those urinals and those troughs and those great performances. You know, everything that happened this last year, the thicker kicker Kansas State win. Somebody, while he was making that majestic kick, was urinating in a trough toilet at that time and missed the whole fucking thing. Like, history is within that porcelain. I think the best way to attain one of those is probably to just hang outside whenever they're doing the demo work and drag it into your pickup truck and drive off. But anyway, Colin, support the troughs.
It seems strange doing this show with no Kansas news and no callers. I missed the callers during the off season. You know what I mean? I like how the callers have sort of become like a talent show. Yeah, you know, like people are breaking out characters and concepts.
I miss Fart Guy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? I feel like we've become like a reality show, where people, you know, they come on and they call in and see if they can,
make their mark.
Yeah. You know, they're trying to entertain. They're part of the show. You know, I mean, they're actively trying to, you know.
Yeah, be a part of the fabric of the show.
Yeah, make content.
What other outlet do they have, too? You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to come on the Gabe Yarman podcast and fart. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to let that on.
No. Well, but obviously here we encourage it.
Yes, we welcome. So anyway, we're rooting for the basketball team to continue its success in the transfer portal. We're rooting for the North End Zone to get done fast and for the trough toilets to stay. And until then, Colin, M-I-Z.
D-O-U.
History is within that porcelain.